It's Saturday Suckage on The Score. Here's your host, Steve Rosenblum.
Our first Suckage, a 104.3 FM high fidelity, crystal clear, 104.3 FM, The Score. Later this hour, I'll be talking with Ricky O'Donnell. Ricky O'Donnell, you should know by now, he's here on the regular, and we love Ricky. Writer, editor, associate director of programming for SB Nation. Talk Bulls. But first, this. Let me tell you about this. You've heard, no doubt, the Atlanta Falcons hired Ian Cunningham, the Bears' assistant general manager. He was hired to be the Falcons' general manager. Assistant to full-time head honcho GM. But the racist NFL won't give the Bears two compensatory draft picks. They won't get them after the third round because Cunningham is not regarded as the top football decision maker. Well, at least the NFL, I don't know if something happened today in the last hour or so where the NFL wised up and gave the Bears what should be theirs. To my knowledge, the NFL hasn't done the right thing. The Falcons say Matt Ryan is the Falcons' top football decision maker. Matt Ryan was hired by Arthur Blank to be the president of football operations, except Matt Ryan doesn't know how to make football decisions. And that comes from Matt Ryan himself.
When you go through the draft process and the free agency, are you going to be actively involved in that, or are you going to let your people do it? Or?
Man, Ian's in charge. In charge of that space. I'm looking forward to learning about, you know, this. Like I said it the other day in Ian's presser, like I've never sat in a draft meeting. And so Monday is going to be the first time I'm sitting in a draft meeting, and I've got a lot to learn. So sitting, observing, being a fly on the wall, if there's something that Ian has a question about or something I can help with, I'm all ears, and I'm happy to share my opinion. But Ian is driving this boat, and he is the one that's leading us moving forward. And I'm excited about that. You guys, you know, Ian is incredibly competent and qualified, and he's awesome. So looking forward to watching him do his thing.
The reason I ask that, because Tony Boselli, who I know very well, actually is in the whole draft process.
I'm going to be
watches tapes,
yes.
and goes to the scouting.
I'm
going to
be in it, but I'm not driving it.
Right. But you're going to be involved.
Yes, I'll be involved, and I'll be involved in whatever way Ian needs me. You know, that really is... You know, Arthur, from the top down, he believes in servant leadership, and there is no better servant leader than Arthur Blank. And I know that from being there as a player. I have felt that for the last month in the role that I'm in. And really, my role is to be that same person for Kevin, to be that same person, you know, for Ian and really the rest of the building. And so, yeah, I'm going to be involved. Like, I love that kind of stuff, and I love being around it. This is what I'm passionate about. But I also understand my responsibility is to be there to help out Ian where I can. And you know, maybe that's offering a different lens and offering a different perspective, but this is Ian's... You know, this is Ian's regular season right now, man. He is in it, and he is driving the ship for us.
Ian Cunningham, the former Bears assistant general manager, the Falcons now, the Falcons general manager, is driving the boat. The president said that. The Bears don't get draft picks. It's stupid. It's unfair. And it extends the racist DNA of the NFL, if you ask me. And even if you don't ask me, it extends the racist DNA of the NFL. Hell of a couple of weeks. Hell of a couple of Super Bowl weeks the NFL is having, right? First of all, you know the long history of racism. Because the Rooney Rule exists to give minorities a chance to become coaches. You don't need... The Rooney Rule enacted, if you're not racist, the NFL needed the Rooney Rule because the NFL is racist. And even with the alleged leveler, the affirmative action rules that the Rooney Rule was supposed to be, the NFL had 10 coaching openings this year. 9 were filled with white guys. 1 man of color filled the other, Robert Saleh, who's Lebanese. No one who's African-American became a coach, and a head coach in the NFL. And now, look at this. You look at it because the NFL can't. NFL needs a vice president in charge of, oh my God, this is stupid. The white Falcons owner hired a white former quarterback who has never done the job to be his president, and he gave the white former quarterback the top football title. Then they hired the black guy as a GM, a promotion for Cunningham. The whole idea of the Rooney Rule and the NFL's idea of progress. He's done all the work and he's not skipped any of the steps. A promotion the NFL should have been proud of. But no. The NFL's not going to give the Bears the draft picks they deserve for having propagated, groomed, gotten this guy to a point where another team would decide he's our general manager and running the draft and free agency and everything else. I don't know if the NFL delights in this or not, but this seems to be racism by citing a technicality. This is sick stuff. It's disgraceful. And have you also heard Robert Kraft talking about getting to 18 games? That's been the talk. In the course of the interview that he gave a couple weeks ago, he called the players our labor. He couldn't have sounded more like a modern-day plantation owner. Our labor. The owners, NFL owners, almost all of them white, will need to negotiate with their labor to get what they want. They will need to get their labor in line with what they see as the best way to run things. Their labor. Yeah. Sounds like code, doesn't it? You know what the subtext is? Coming from an old white guy like that. The NFL just simply, it can't do the right thing. The Rooney Rule was supposed to try to make that possible. But what it has become is another obstacle for teams to find favorite African Americans to interview, do that up front, so then they can hire the white guy they wanted to hire all along. It's disgraceful. Everybody knows it. Everybody sees it. The white guy atop the NFL hierarchy says they have work to do. Roger Goodell said it at his press conference this week. We have work to do. The white guy atop the NFL hierarchy always says they have work to do. But they never really do the work. They run out guys like Jim Trotter because he asks hard questions about racial equality all across the NFL platform. It embarrasses the NFL. It embarrasses them, embarrasses it. The NFL isn't it. Embarrasses it with the truth. The white NFL doesn't like being embarrassed. The white powers in the league act and sound like they're infallible, even if 30 years of Jerry Jones as GM laughingly proves otherwise. Power doesn't like being told it's wrong. A lot of examples of that in this country right now. You're going to hear the Lincoln Memorial screaming, wrong! Look, I'm saying this, and I am less likely to play the race card than to ask about it. I've never faced a black ceiling. I'm white. And I could be wrong about this. You can text and tell me. You can call and tell me. But from where I sit, where I stand, what I see, this just looks like more NFL racism in black and white. And I don't get it. I don't know how the NFL could miss it. Maybe you see what you want. Maybe you see what you want when you're the power, when you have all the power, when you don't view racism as, look, we did this. Look, we have the Rooney Rule. We talked to them. We didn't hire them. We talked to them. Isn't that what you want us to do? Talk to them, interview them. And then there's Ian Cunningham, a guy who the top football decision maker in Atlanta says, this is his baby. He's driving the ship. He's doing everything. We're just hanging on. We're just hanging back. We're watching. And when it's a white president of a team working for a white owner, and they're talking about promoting an African-American who did it right, did it the right way, did not skip any of the steps, and did not take just any job that was out there. His name has been bandied about. He's interviewed the last couple of years. Ian Cunningham, brought in by Ryan Poles. Kudos to the Bears. They found a general manager they thought was the right guy. He happened to be African-American. And that general manager brought in someone he thought the world of. Called him his brother in various ways. And that way exactly. Brought him in. They worked together. Ian Cunningham learned the lessons. Stepped steps. Did all of it right, in the right order, got the job. The Bears should be commended for being an example to the rest of the NFL when the rest of the NFL is just showing its racist ass. The Bears deserve the draft picks. The NFL deserves your scorn. It's a disgrace. You think I'm wrong? You can let me know. But I believe the NFL's racist DNA is showing in this and will continue. I'm not sure what gets it to change. But the right thing to do would be to reward the Bears with draft picks, because you would be rewarding them for doing something the rest of the league should be doing, but a majority is not. And when you're a league that has to enact a Rooney rule because everybody's a racist, so many people are racist, whatever it is, it's wildly, predominantly racist. If it wasn't, you wouldn't need the Rooney rule. It's there. It's ignored. It's a disgrace. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some Bulls basketball. Maybe Ricky O'Donnell knows what they're doing. Or why they're doing it, or what it represents. I don't. This is Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 FM.
Do you regret not doing this a year earlier? Because it seems like you guys wasted a year coming to the same conclusion that could have been found at this point last year.
I do not. I think we were at that stage as well. We continue evaluating our young guys. And, you know, Josh, it was Mata's first year. So I think right now it's a good timing, and we addressed it.
That's our tourist, Connor Chauvis, asking if it was too late. You wish you'd done this last year. No, he doesn't. So he's inept and inert, and when he's not inert, he's late. He's late by several years, as a matter of fact. Speaking of the incomprehensibles, see what I did there, Tyler? Do you see what I did there? Let me tell you this. Tonight, the Bulls host the Nuggets at the United Center. Pregame coverage begins at 6:45. Tip-off at 7 on 104.3 The Score and the Fitzgerald Equipment Bulls Radio Network, powered by Heli Forklifts. Let's go back to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Joining me now, Ricky O'Donnell. Ricky O'Donnell is a favorite here. He's writer, editor, associate director of programming for SB Nation. And you have put in capital letters sometimes, Ricky, how this guy is not just late this year, he was late last year. He's doing something that should have been done and can't help him this year. So why don't you whiteboard for the class what is probably an awful lot of bio building up listening to this gentleman heading the Bulls basketball operation, listening to him talk?
Yeah, I just think it's hard to separate the moves Arturis made at the trade deadline this year from his complete ineptitude the last five seasons, really. I'm glad he made a lot of these trades. I think it was a wise move to trade Kobe White, trade Ayo Dosunmu. I was suggesting this coming into the trade deadline. But man, when you saw the returns for some of these good players, it just leaves you feeling so cold. The Bulls have not won a playoff series since 2015, playing in the JV conference that's known as the East, and they're not going to win a playoff series for a long, long time. This team continues to be so far away from just getting anything right in general, and I think it's good that, you know, they finally realized if you're not going to re-sign some of these guys, if the team's going nowhere, flip them, get some future assets. But I'd feel a whole lot better about it if they had a sharper executive leading this than Arturis Karnišovas, who has shown himself to be completely incompetent at every turn. So, you know, the Bulls, they refuse to tear it down. They try to build from the middle. That is a very difficult task to accomplish, and they would have been able to build up easier and more quickly if he would have just torn this thing down from the start after Lonzo Ball got injured. Instead, we just wasted 5 years. Whatever, what's 5 years? And now maybe they're taking their medicine, but, you know, it's hard to trust the guy leading this charge.
Ricky O'Donnell is my guest, SB Nation, and we're talking Bulls basketball here on The Score, 104.3 FM, Chicago Sports Radio, The Score. Since he took over, his first-round draft picks, the first round has gone like this. Patrick Williams in 2020. 2021, that was gone for Vooch. 2022, Dalen Terry, traded twice, cut by the last team that had him. 2023, traded for Vooch. 2024, Matis Bouzelas. 2025, Noah Essengay, who came in slight and got hurt, and God knows. I mean, there's a history that tells you that Essengay is going to be nothing. And that's based on the way this guy drafts. Is where do you look for faith if you're a sucker Bulls fan or if you're a sucker owner? Where do you look for, what can you point to that speaks well of this guy's abilities when you look at those first round drafts?
Yeah, I would say maybe he can get lucky, right? Like, Gar Forman was terrible at his job, and Gar Forman drafted a Hall of Famer with the 30th pick in the draft. That was Jimmy Butler. That was probably the last really great draft pick the Bulls made. And I like Modest, and I think Modest has had a really solid age 21 season. He's going to continue to be a good player for the Bulls. I'm sure he'll get better. But there's so much on Modest's shoulders right now because the Bulls need a savior. They need a franchise player. They haven't had it since peak D-Rose. They haven't had it since Jimmy Butler was playing at an all-NBA level, and they traded him 9 years ago. And look at what this team has been. Since they traded Butler, they're the fifth worst team in the NBA. Cumulatively, over that time period, this is now the third rebuild they're doing post-Jimmy Butler. And in none of these rebuilds have they ever fully committed to the bit to really try to tear it all the way down and to build from the ground up. Instead, they just put, you know, a bandage over a bullet hole, and they're never actually able to grow this thing the right way. So we'll see if they could do it this time. I obviously have no faith in Arturis. I have no faith in the Reinsdorfs in general. As his bosses, if Michael Reinsdorf had any competence as a leader, he would fire Arturis today, hire somebody else, and let them try to build it back up. But Michael Reinsdorf seems completely uninterested, just like his father, in whether or not the Bulls are good or bad. We know that Jerry, owning two teams in this city, he doesn't care if they win. All he wants to do is fill the stands, not have the team be one of the worst teams in the league, to avoid that national-level embarrassment. And that's how they get stuck in mediocrity over and over again. So this cycle has been continuing for 25 years with two franchises in this town. It all goes back to Jerry Reinsdorf, who truly thinks the fans who care about the Bulls and who care about the White Sox are stupid people. He just wants to take your money at every opportunity, put in as small amount of work and as small bit of care as possible, and extract the profits. And that's how the Bulls and the White Sox both find themselves in this situation. And it's disgusting. The Bulls should be a marquee franchise in the NBA. Instead, they are a joke. They will continue to be a joke for the foreseeable future because Arturis Karnišovas is their lead executive, and Jerry and Michael Reinsdorf call the shot.
Bulls fans are to blame. I said that earlier in the show. They keep filling the place. They'll tolerate suckage, and they'll get suckage. They keep showing up. They fill the place no matter how bad the product is, no matter how bad management is, no matter how bad ownership is. So if you're looking at Bears fan or Bulls fans, what percentage of the blame do they get for enabling this kind of crap?
Thanks for bringing that up. I'm going to push back on you a little bit because I feel like the real world is hard enough, Steve, and you could like look at the news every day and what's happening, you know, outside of the arenas, and it's people need a distraction. They need something that ties themselves to the community and ties themselves to their neighbors. And I think sports do that more than anything else in our daily lives. So I don't really begrudge people for going to a Bulls game. You know, it's kind of almost like going to like a Saved by the Bell themed bar at this point. You walk in and you're like, hey, remember the 90s? I remember the 90s.
Yeah.
And because of that, Reinsdorf's just able to extract profit at every turn. Well, the other thing is that Chicago is the biggest market in the league with only one team. LA is multiple teams. New York is multiple teams. Chicago's got so many millions of people in the metro area, and so many of the people filling the United Center are like corporate suits that, you know, are bringing clients to the game and whatnot. So I don't begrudge Bulls fans for wanting a distraction and for wanting to have something that ties them into their community and connects them with their neighbors. It's just unbelievable that Reinsdorf continues to run this like a passive income business, that he doesn't have to do anything and he just gets to pull out the profits. And at some point, sell the team, Jerry. You don't love Chicago at all. You think all of us are suckers. You get $7 billion tomorrow if you sold the Bulls based off of what the Celtics and the Lakers recently went for. But he won't do it because he hates us. And he just wants to continue to get his annual money, get his check that he gets every year for not paying the luxury tax. I think it's $13 or $14 million this year that he gets from the other big market teams that actually try to win, something Jerry's never tried to do in his life. And at a certain point, you would hope that Michael Reinsdorf, his son, who grew up in the championship locker rooms led by Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Phil Jackson, would put in enough care to actually make this team great, which it should be. And Michael Reinsdorf, unfortunately, as the son of a billionaire, just seems completely incompetent and refuses to hold Arturis Karnišovas accountable for the crimes against basketball that everyone else in the world can see that he has committed.
There's one we learned about today. A new one, the Kobe trade with the Hornets. It was 3 second-round picks. Then it got reduced to 2 because he's hurt. The Bulls played him while he was hurt. There was a calf injury. He played while he was hurt. He played 30 minutes when he was hurt. The Hornets looked at that and said, he's hurt. And the Bulls said, oh, okay, we won't take as many second-round picks. So remember, he came in and he was busted for tampering. Cost the Bulls a second-round pick 5 years ago trying to sign Lonzo Ball. I mean, this guy is incompetent then, incompetent now, and it does not seem to be, other than losing a second-round pick, it does not seem to register anywhere with this guy. I'm just shaking my head at that.
That was beyond crazy. Like, you're trying to trade Kobe and Io, and you're playing them both heavy minutes the day before you trade him? Like, what is going on here? Somebody needs to step in and be like, hey, man, if you're trading these guys, shut them down so they don't get hurt here. And let's be honest. Kobe's been playing hurt the entire season. He's been hurt since the summer. Did not compete in training camp at all. Missed the first 10 games of the year. My heart breaks for Kobe because he seems like a really good guy. He's obviously a competitor, willing to play injured, unlike a lot of guys in the NBA, honestly. And in a contract year when you could have potentially gotten a contract paying him, you know, $20, $25 million a season, he's been one of the more underpaid players in the NBA on this last deal. And, of course, the Bulls can't do anything with it. They just win 38 games every year like always. I just could not believe when I saw that news that it's like too believable, actually, that the Bulls played an injured player and then lost draft compensation in the trade. Honestly, that was an awful trade, just given the return. When it was announced, now it looks even worse. If they didn't want Kobe White in their long-term plans, trade him a year ago, trade him 2 years ago. That's when he actually has value on this very team-friendly deal that he's been playing under. Now he's due for a big raise, and the Bulls decided, hey, we're not going to re-sign him. Might as well get a couple second-round picks. I'll give him some props on that, because in previous seasons, they would have gone for the play-in tournament. They would have said, hey, if we can win 2 games in the play-in tournament, we make the playoffs, and then I'm a success as Arturis Karnišovas. This year, it seems like he finally sobered up a little bit, and he realized, okay, even if you do get into the play-in tournament, you stink. You're accomplishing nothing. Getting the 8 seed in the East is absolutely nothing to be proud of. So I do think he made some good moves here, just flipping his guys, but ultimately it's too little too late, and the Bulls remain so far away from being a team that actually competes for something, and that would be at least, I don't know, a conference finals berth or something. It's going to be a long road to get there.
My guest is Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation. We're talking Bulls basketball here on The Score, 104.3 Chicago Sports Radio. So, of the human beings acquired in uniform, as in whatever combination they are, what do you think of the players who were brought in? Who's going to stick around?
Yeah, some interesting flyers Arturis took at this trade deadline. I really like Jaden Ivey when he was coming out of the draft at Purdue a few years ago, a top five overall pick. When I watched him in college and was covering the NBA draft for SB Nation, I said, man, I don't know how many guard prospects I've seen as athletic as Jaden Ivey, especially with his length at 6'9". He's got a little on-ball defense. He's got an improved shooting stroke over the years. He's really interesting, I think, but he suffered just a catastrophic injury on New Year's Day 2025. Cole Anthony, very dirty play, just undercut him by diving for a loose ball at his legs, broke his fibula, then needed knee surgery coming back. So he's still, you know, not himself. It just looks like he can't beat anyone off the dribble right now. I do think he could be an interesting player long term if the Bulls can re-sign him. But here's one thing I'm worried about. The Bulls have all this cap space this summer. The Bulls are going to try to sign some free agents. Stop me if you've heard that one before, Rosie, over the last 25 years. But Jaden Ivey has a $30 million cap hole. So they need to agree to a deal with him to actually access their cap space. But why would Jaden Ivey immediately agree to a team-friendly deal? I feel like if you're going to get a guy on a team-friendly deal in restricted free agency, you kind of got to drag it out because they're going to wait to see if they have other suitors. So I'm interested to see what happens there. Otherwise, I do like Rob Dillingham. They got him for Io. I was a big fan of Dillingham coming out of Kentucky. Very exciting player. Great mix of speed, quickness off the bounce. Super deep shooting range he showed in college. He shot 44% from three back then. Really good playmaker. The Minnesota Timberwolves, a very good team, very good organization under Tim Connelly and Chris Finch. They made a bold trade, trading an unprotected 2030s draft pick to go get him in the top 10. He couldn't even get on the floor. They basically looked at him and were like, well, this guy's like 6'1", 160 pounds, so maybe he can't actually play NBA basketball. I think it could be cool to give him a runway because everything the Bulls are doing the rest of this season lacks meaning. They're basically just trying to improve their lottery odds and finish out the string. So why not? I want to see Rob Dillingham shoot some pull-up threes and throw some cool alley-oops and do some crossovers and finally get an extended runway for his first time as an NBA player. I think Rob Dillingham and Jaden Ivey could, you know, be potentially interesting buy low bets. I'm not going to call them busts just because our terrorists traded for them. But, you know, they need to take their lumps in the NBA. So hopefully that'll bring the Bulls some losses to close out this year, and their lottery odds will look a little bit better when the ping pong balls bounce in May.
Anfernee Simons, what a whirlwind thing. Hi, come on, family, we're going. Toronto, get through customs, and we're going to put up 20. Long term, where does he fit in the Bulls' plans, if at all?
Yeah, he's an unrestricted free agent. He's been a really good player for a long time, very similar player to Kobe White, where the guy's just a walking bucket, not a very good defensive player, doesn't really have a well-rounded game, but he shoots the hell out of the ball. This year, it's like 14 threes per 100 possessions and making them at a 40% clip. Those are both massive numbers, but he's an unrestricted free agent. So I think really the Bulls did that Vooch trade, which I commend them for. I never thought anyone would take Vooch at this point. And the best asset they got in that was the first pick in the second round, essentially. They got the Pelicans second round pick, so that'll be a premium pick. You look at the NBA draft the last 5-6 years, you should be able to get a good player with a top 10 pick in the second round. The Bulls did get Io in that range, so hopefully Arturis can somehow luck into another draft hit, despite the fact that his draft process is completely flawed. And then Simons was essentially the matching salary, because that's what you have to do in the NBA. So I like Simons. He's a good player. I don't know if he makes sense on the Bulls long term. I think they mostly acquired him to get the pick, to match the salaries, to get rid of Vooch. But he's good. I mean, he is probably somewhere from 85% to 110%, as good as Kobe White. Very similar archetype. So he could win the Bulls some games at the end of the season here. Same thing with Colin Sexton. I wonder if Sexton will be on the buyout market. Simon should have some real suitors in free agency. He was very good in Boston this year for the type of player he is. So they did that trade for the pick, but I'm just glad I don't have to look at Vooch on my TV anymore.
You were talking about the value of the last pick of the first round, which is the first pick of the second round, because the Pelicans are so bad, that's the way it's going to go. And you made the point that AK's choice to do this now, to suck now, is 2 years too late. You were making the point about draft classes.
Oh, yeah. So I cover the draft for SB Nation. I've been doing it since 2013 or 2014 at this point. Hard to believe it's been that long. But the drafts you wanted to tank for were 2025 and 2026, because what you want when you're tanking is prospects that are so good that even the worst teams in the league and the worst GMs in the league would still take them. And that's what Cooper Flagg was. Any team would have taken Cooper Flagg. Not even Arturas could have screwed that up if he won the lottery and was able to get the top pick in 2025. 2026 might be even better. Cameron Boozer, Carlos Boozer's son, is unbelievable. I think he's every bit as good as Cooper Flagg. The guy's a complete stud. It seems like he's going to go third for some reason because we still keep screwing up the draft. But he's the best player in the class. So Cameron Boozer in 2026. You got also have Darren Peterson, A.J. DeBonta. You got Caleb Wilson from North Carolina, who's playing Boozer this afternoon. Going to be an amazing game. Also, Kingston Flemings is probably the fifth best prospect in this class from Houston. If the Bulls can move up into the top four in the lottery, Arturas is going to look pretty vindicated, I think, in his trade deadline moves. They need a stroke of luck. And one thing about the Bulls is they just never get lucky. Now, they don't put themselves in position to get lucky. The last time they moved up, they did it for Patrick Williams. And then they rewarded him with a $90 million contract, made it even worse. Patrick Williams would probably be on the street right now with Dalen Terry if he didn't have this guaranteed deal. I do not think he's an NBA player. He has no athleticism. He cannot dribble. He is so, so, so bad. Seems like a nice kid, but just a bad pick at number four overall and a very poor use of $90 million, unfortunately. So this is too little too late for Arturas. They need to get lucky, you know, to move up in the lottery. And I will say the Atlanta Hawks moved up from 10 to 1 from the lottery, you know, to the top pick in 2024. The Dallas Mavericks moved up from 11 to 1 in 2025. So it can happen. And Adam Silver, to save basketball in Chicago, Arturas Karnatsovas is not sharp enough to build this thing the right way. Michael Reinsdorf has just no idea what he's doing, and Jerry Reinsdorf continues to give the middle finger to the paying customers for two teams in this city. So Adam Silver, you're the only man who could save pro basketball in Chicago. Bring Cameron Boozer home, let him be a Bull, and then maybe the Bulls could have some hope.
Give me that ball! Just like his dad. Yeah. That's a way to do it. Ricky, I appreciate it. Your passion, your insight, your knowledge made us all smarter. I appreciate that. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation, writer, editor, associate director of programming. Always fun. Always insightful. Doesn't hold back. That's the way it goes. When we take a break, everything, because the Super Bowl is in Santa Clara. But the home of the San Francisco 49ers. Bears fans, did you hear that? Santa Clara is about 45 minutes away from San Francisco, and yet that's where the San Francisco 49ers play, in Santa Clara. So that's where the Chicago Bears can play in Northwest Indiana, and they'll still be the Chicago Bears. Let some other state deal with giving them all that money. I want them to get the money. Anything to keep improving the team, get all the money. But before we go, we were just talking Bulls with Ricky O'Donnell, and Vooch came up, and Vooch posted this on Twitter. Let me read this to you. Chicago, thank you for welcoming me and my family 5 years ago. It was an honor to represent the Bulls, a historic franchise, and to play in front of some of the best fans in the world at the United Center. While I hoped we could have achieved more together on the court, I will always be grateful for my time there and for everything this chapter gave me. My family and I will truly miss the city and all the incredible people we met along the way. To the Bulls staff, who I had the pleasure of working closest with, a special thank you for the support, the laughs, and the moments we shared throughout my time here. You all mean so much to me. And those relationships will always be bigger than the game. P.S. As a foodie, I really enjoyed all the great restaurants Chicago has to offer. On a downside, you have kind of ruined it for me, wherever else I may go. Nice touch. Vooch. Now a Boston Celtic. Nicely done. All right, take a break. Chicago Sports Radio. And I will tell you this. We're going back to San Francisco before we end the show. About a famous meme. You've seen this again and again and again. You probably didn't know it was from San Francisco. So I'll explain it to you, Lucy. Chicago Sports Radio 104 FM.
We have the cultural zeitgeist.
Right now, you're doing something for the culture.
Oh, baby.
Do it for the culture.
For the culture.
Do it. Do it. Do it a little slower. Like.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
That's the anthem. Get your damn hands up. I do this for my culture.
Joe, warn the Chiefs.
Ohms. Ohms.
Ohms. Ohms.
I don't know.
I think we've really penetrated the cultural zeitgeist.
We have cultural zeitgeist. The FM debut of the cultural zeitgeist here on Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 Score. So, as long as we're all San Francisco, Santa Clara, Super Bowl tomorrow, you can hear it on the Score. Pre-game at 1 o'clock, kickoff at 5:30, Patriots and Seahawks. Patriots are going to win because based on, well, you jumble around, look at it a lot of different ways. You move the numbers around. You look at recent play, overall play. And really, the determining factor, the reason Patriots are going to win is because of the two coaches, Mike Vrabel's a guy I want to have a beer and pizza with. But anyways, it's going to happen in San Francisco, Levi Stadium. Actually, Santa Clara, Levi Stadium, home of the San Francisco 49ers. Just like someday there'll be a Super Bowl on a field the Chicago Bears play in Northwest Indiana. Anyways, I found a piece about a San Francisco story about a cultural legend. If I say the white blinking guy meme, Tyler, do you know who I'm talking about? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Not off the top of my head.
It happened while you were alive. You're allowed. I mean, really. The white blinking guy meme on Twitter. You know the.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
No, you're lying.
I need a little bit of a visual.
Okay. It's a very famous meme. Tyler?
I can see it now. I can see it now.
Well, in newspapering, telling a story, we always said, you can do this, you know, on TV, too. Here's the issue. Here's the story. Put a face on it. So we had the face. Now we had to put a name on it. SFGate.com put a name on it. His name is Drew Scanlon. I had no idea. You've seen it everywhere for the last 8-9 years. He's a San Francisco resident since 2011. He works as a video producer for Twitch. We do Twitch. We have Twitch mobs, not on this show, which sucks, but we have Twitch mobs on this station. He hosts a pair of podcasts about Formula One and iconic movies. Back in the early 2010s, he was working at a website covering the video game industry called Giant Bomb. There's a name. That's a game, right? During a weekly live stream in 2013, they were playing a game called Starbound. Do you know Starbound?
Unfamiliar.
You're unfamiliar with a lot of things I've asked you.
I am unfamiliar
today.
With a lot of things. You were right.
All right. Anyways, one of his colleagues during this game called Starbound, one of his colleagues dropped a fairly juvenile double entendre. And that is when Scanlon hit back with what's become the iconic combo of an incredulous long blink, followed by rapid fire eye twitches, right? Now you got it. Long blink and then quick twitches. It turns out Giant Bomb fans often shared clips from those live stream videos. The thing was being live streamed. They caught it and they shared those clips. And it wasn't unusual for it to become a GIF, It took nearly 4 years to make it to a slow snowball to ubiquity. Quote from Scanlon, one of those users sent me a message and said, "Hey, my mom used this meme on Facebook. She has no idea who you are." That's when I realized it had sort of jumped species from our little video game corner of the internet to the wider mainstream audience. It has estimated to be viewed by 400 million people, made 400 million impressions. Drew Scanlon, there's your white guy, blinking white guy meme. And now you know, San Francisco legend. They'll play a Super Bowl there tomorrow. You will hear it here on The Score. If you only get AM because you're far out, we'll still be on 670. But if you're anywhere closer than 50 miles, you'll get it on 104.3 FM, Chicago Sports Radio, The Score.
Wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.